Hi, I'm contractor Kevin Kennedy, host of Your Valuable Home.
And I'm Ron Melk, Kevin's alter ego and co-host. We are not your average home show.
We educate homeowners on how to get the best value for their home improvement dollar, how to compare estimates and contractors, plan projects, select the right person for your project, get the job done right at the right price and on time.
Listen and learn at 2 p.m. every Saturday on WWDB 860.
All right, Ron, I know we got an excited college. One of my favorite people are coming on. And who do we have that we're going to be talking about today?
We've got a Your Valuable Home regular one. Carolyn Blazowski, America's Healthy Home Expert, who you really got to listen to because she knows her stuff. So, Carolyn, welcome back to the show for probably, what, the fifth time, sixth time, something like that?
Hey, guys, it's like family. It's my family.
Yeah, and not enough if it's five or six. We need to learn a lot more than this.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do that. We got a new year coming up, and we're going into our sixth year on the air, so buckle up. Here we go. Okay? Caroline's got a she's going to be talking about a couple things. She's got some advice on how you keep your home healthy and safe and into the new year. But first, she's got one of the subjects that's near and dear to my heart, mold. She's got a mold update. So what's the mold update?
So I think it's important for listeners to know that recently, one of the most recent studies that has come out of the NIH, which is the National Institutes of Health, which for people who don't know, that's basically the governing agency that works on health and medical issues in our country, basically had some findings that were interesting about autism and linking autism as well as neuropsychiatric symptoms and immune processes that are affected by molds. And they're affected by molds because of the mycotoxin, actually, that molds produce. So I think that's huge news. And people who, you know, are in the autism spectrum or people who work with autism or, you know, parents, families that have autistic children, I think it's important for them to have this information.
Yeah, personally, and you know, you and I have talked for hours about this subject. I think that years from now, it's going to be discovered to be not the cause, but something that precipitates or exacerbates a lot of different conditions. The research needs to be done.
That's right. And you're looking at exposures to molds. You know, we always knew that they were commonly associated with things like allergies and asthma. That was the, you know, staple. But now this association is basically illustrating that there's many other complex health problems that exist and that certain molds, the toxic molds you hear about like Stachybotrys and Trichoderma and Chytomium, these produce mycotoxins. Not all molds have the ability to produce a mycotoxin, but when they do, now we're finding that this can get absorbed through the skin, through the airways, and actually through the intestinal lining, and now it's able to, you know, alter not only neurologic function, but also immune system function.
Yeah. I get nervous here.
Well, you should be. I mean, it's a serious subject, which has not gotten, it's not gotten the attention that it has by just about everybody. You know, it's the more research has to be done in this whole area.
Absolutely.
Carolyn, explain mycotoxin for anybody out there who doesn't understand what that is.
Right. And so I'd like to explain mold because they do three things. So mold is, you'll see that fuzzy thing growing in your shower or on a piece of fruit. That's actually the spore, and that's what we associate with if you have a moldy bathroom, moldy shower. That spore contains what we call a sugar called a beta-glucan, and that causes an allergic reaction in a percentage of the population. So molds can cause allergies and asthma. The other thing that molds can do is they also can produce a gas, like a VOC, similar to paints or any kind of chemical toxin you hear about. They breathe in and out, just like people do. I mean, these things are active living creatures, so they kind of do the exact same things that we do. Thirdly, besides producing a gas, they also produce certain ones that have the ability can produce a mycotoxin. And people say, well, why would they produce this mycotoxin? Well, for example, if you and Kevin and I were all molds and we were fighting for a piece of wood and that was our food source, we would send off mycotoxins to deter each other from that food source. So they're actually really smart and very territorial, and they actually want to survive. So they produce this poison that comes out that makes people sick. So, and they can also attack, too, when they're being cleaned up. So say you were to go into a basement and not clean up everything. Say you just go down and clean up a little bit of the mold. They actually send out a signal to other molds in their colony telling them to produce a mycotoxin because they sense danger or they are in danger. So they're really smart, and when they do this, they can make us sick.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
Well, so talking about, well, I know one of my wife's friends had gave you a call, and you were an unbelievable help to her. She has not a mold house. She had texted my wife a picture. Here's how bad it was. There was actually plants grown between the base molding and the carpet. It was so moldy.
Yeah, horrible.
Oh my God.
And mushrooms can grow, any kind of fungus. You know, if you've got plant life and a lot of moss and all of that stuff is triggered by high moisture content. So you can get mushrooms. I've seen mushrooms grow in people's carpets, and it's real fun.
Yeah, that's fun. That's when I knew there was a little bit of a problem. When I tried staying up, I said, listen, I mean, the best way to figure this out is to call the experts. So when I told her to call you, I said, I mean, I can give you some I know about it, but I'm more of the I'll take it out and how to get it, you know, back to normal. But you need somebody to tell you about the pros and cons and really the remediation of it. So that's why I told her to give you a call, which as neurotic as she is, but she just had a mold remediation done. I don't know what they did. I wanted to stay out of it.
So you don't know what they did?
I don't know how you can send one guy in to remediate a whole entire house when there's mushrooms growing on the carpet between the base molding. There's plants. It was bad. Some of the pictures
I've seen. You have to be there for like a year.
So my question to you is, if they didn't get all this, you just said that there's that possibility that the colony that survived or put these neurotoxins out because we got to survive. So they just moved back in. So is that something they should really be worried about?
Yeah. So what you have to make sure you do is when you do mold remediation, you have to test before and after. There should always be a protocol because otherwise, how do you know you got it all?
Right.
That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is when you've had extensive mold exposure like that, where you've had, you know, extensive water damage and people have let it go, this is why you want to do your construction remodeling regularly. You don't want to let things go because when you do, you end up with these colonies that are very aggressive, and they can also cause more problem. So in that case, there's probably a lot of mycotoxin that was distributed around the house. And these are like little micron, smaller than a micron particles that they don't get removed. They get into crevices, into doors, into windows, you know, into little spaces. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of people stay sick, Kevin, like after, you know, the mold's gone and they say, well, the mold's gone, but I still don't feel well in my house. It's usually not the mold. It's the mycotoxin that contributes that's left behind.
Mm-hmm. Well, how's somebody going to be able to remediate? I'm still trying to figure out in my mind how this per se contractor remediate when it's behind the walls?
Well, I mean, you have to basically, if you've got it that extensively, you have to remove the walls and you have to go down to your, you know, your framing.
You have to take drywall out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has to come out. You know,
that's
you can't, people
house.
Like to go over things or paint over this kind of stuff. You can't do it. So you need to really remove it and, you know, leave a border, a perimeter around the space where it, you know, you've got a clearance area. Just like you're cutting out a cancer or any type of biological agent, you've got to make sure you get enough of it and it's gone. And in a lot of cases, I mean, it's possible to remediate it. So, you know, people shouldn't be scared of it, but you don't, it's preventative, right? You don't want to let this stuff get to a point where you've got a lot of colonization happening, a lot of different molds happening, because then it just becomes this, you know, big soup of neurotoxic and mycotoxin mess.
Let me ask you this. I've heard this many times. You know, somebody say we had mold, but we took bleach to it and it went away. Does bleach take mold away? Does it?
No.
And to cure
the
problem?
EPA, right. And the EPA, that is not the recommendation for mold. And the reason is it bleaches out the spore, but the spore and the components that can be irritants remain. So think about it. If you bleach out your shower, that protein still stays behind. It's just, it's now it's turned white. So you think it's not there, but that's not the case.
So what is
deluding yourself then?
Yeah, what would somebody use then?
You want to use some type of antifungal agent. There's a lot of different ones. We actually use for safer reasons. We use a lot of hydrogen peroxide. You can use a lot of the remediation companies can use Benefect, which is it's actually an herb-based, FDA-approved disinfectant. So that's a good product to use as well. And then, of course, there are, you know, Concrobium and different products. There's a Concrobium product that's actually really good that you can get at Home Depot. And then you can get into Shockwave and different antifungals and antimicrobials that are really aggressive. So, you know, you allow your remediator to work with you. And if you are concerned about doing things healthier, there's definitely alternatives for doing it. But don't use bleach. No bleach.
Yep. So I told everybody that.
Yeah.
Because that was the last time we had the conversation. I think it was one of the first times we did the interview. I was telling you how I really put a lot of bleach on. I was giving me a headache. And I remember you just said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. And I learned, and it's we use the peroxide to clean the showers
right
now.
Hydrogen peroxide is much better. And also, I think a lot of contractors listen to the show. And I'm sure because Kevin is a super expert, you know, I'm sure a lot
Thank
of
you.
People want to hear what you're doing as sort of a leading authority. And what's important is when you're working on these jobs and you know that there's mold involved, especially what we know about the exposure to mycotoxins, you really have to take precautions for yourself and for your workers to just not be inhaling this stuff and making sure that it's not airborne and trying to, you know, using protocols like they use for lead remediation or even using things for, you know, when you remove any kind of airborne, you know, particulate makes sense in these cases. You don't want to be breathing this stuff in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're doing a lot of the big kitchen renovations, and we know right around the sink area, there's definitely some water that was leaking, and that's probably 5 out of 10 jobs. I mean, one of the things we do is, again, lead paint certification. One of the things that we did get out of this is how to hang a plastic tarp properly. So, mm-hmm. you know, people just put a couple of nails or just some tape on top and just droop it. No, it doesn't work that way. What you need to do is you apply painter's tape around the flooring area to the walls. This way it doesn't peel it off. Then you apply a 6 mil polyethylene, and then you put a Gorilla Tape. We use Gorilla Tape to apply mm-hmm. over top of that. So it is sealed as best as possible mm-hmm. to keep it contained. Because that's what we're trying to do is you're not going to be able to stop it when we're ripping it out, but to contain it into an area where you can clean up as you go instead of it going through and spreading throughout the entire house. So that's what we
exactly.
try to do is contain
it. And I think it's important for people to know that, just like, even if you give somebody, you know, do-it-yourselfers, because you know how many times people decide, oh, I'm going to do remediation, I'm going to just rip out my kitchen, rip out my bathroom, or do remodeling. It's so important that they know at least some kind of protocol that they can use.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time it's a little one, but bathrooms, when we go rip bathrooms out, most of the time lately, because we've been trying to do a lot more of the newer houses, there really is not much mold to it. But some of the older homes where I did look at, I didn't even get the job. And I said, one of the things I'm going to really need to do, because it's nasty. And by having, you can actually smell that pungent mold
oh, yeah.
going uh-huh. into the bathroom. I said, this is a little bit more of an issue. I'm going to be setting steps up, and it does cost me more money. But you know what? It's going to cost the homeowner more money for me to do these steps. So, oh, this guy's cheaper. We just want it out. And then, hey, you want to take that risk, that's your prerogative. But I don't want to do that. I want to be able to give you the right job from start to finish. And it's trying to educate the consumer that you need to spend the right dollar amount to get the right job, just because the job's done. But you have all those, as you said, the neurotoxins that we were ripping out that were all over the place. It's exactly. not good for the homeowner.
Right.
No. And anytime you can go out through like a window or a, you know, an entranceway, like when people do remediation in basements, I know not everybody has a walkout or has an area where they can go directly out. But anytime you can do that, you always want to take stuff out through the closest entrance.
Okay. Yeah, so you're not walking through that the entire house.
Mm-hmm. Well, we spend a lot of time talking about mold. Maybe some people think we spend too much time, but I don't think it can ever spend too much time talking about mold, because it's a problem that is just all over the place. You know, new homes, older homes, new homes.
Yeah, and these are, when I look at homes, I mean, and I recommend to people all over the country what they should be looking for when they're purchasing a home. The two things that I really push are mold, you know, do mold testing before you buy any property, and then, of course, water testing. And these things can cost you a lot of money if they're not up to par. Also, you may not want the property if you find out, you know, it had extensive water damage or if it has a contaminated, you know, water source. So, I mean, these are important things. We know more and more now that environmental factors are contributing to health effects more than we ever, you know, realized. And more information is just coming out. So, you know, if you want to try to be as healthy as possible, you need to start taking these things into consideration.
Yeah, I'd like to see an organization like, and for Philadelphia, well, they go beyond that, but an organization like Pew or somebody like that sponsors some research into this with specific diseases, cancer, you know, like some other autoimmune diseases like, it just goes on and on and on. Rheumatoid arthritis. Maybe it has an impact on that. I don't know. I think it's got to be researched. I'm almost convinced it's got an impact on cancer, on various types of cancer.
Well, we already know it does. Cancer, yeah. It's been proven that the mycotoxin exposure has a cancer link. And that's where people can visit a company called Real Time Labs in Carlton, Texas. And they have some great documentation and information about how mycotoxins play into, you know, not only being neurotoxins and affecting the body from a neurologic and immune standpoint, but also from a cancer standpoint. We know that these neurotoxins are carcinogenic, mycotoxins.
Okay.
So it's important for people to realize that, yes, this does play into your health. That's been documented. And it's just a matter of getting the word out there and educating people more about how to not have mold in their homes and how to avoid it at all costs.
Or how to avoid buying a house that's loaded with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's get into Caroline. What would you offer as advice? You got a couple of things that you don't have the other time. You got the cold weather. You got like bronchitis, the flu, whatever going around this time of the year. A lot of people getting together. What are some good tips for the holidays? Keep yourself and your house healthy over the holidays.
Well, everybody's sick, right? So, you know, the first thing, obviously, you have to wash your hands, and that's, you know, common sense to everybody. But you really, when you come in from the mall or you come in from any location, you know, especially when you're out touching all the keypads and your, you know, your money and your ATM and stuff, you really need to just wash your hands. Secondly, you want to keep your windows, and I know Kevin and I have talked about this in the past, but crack during the holidays. So if you're having a lot of people in, the carbon dioxide gets quite high just because we're, you know, more congestion, more people, you'll feel tired, you'll feel lethargic, the air quality gets really poor. So if you open up the windows just cracked, you know, you don't have to freeze everyone out, just keep everything open. That helps to circulate and reduce a lot of that stuff that happens when you have traffic and people coming in the house. So that's really important.
So let me ask you this. I mean, my parents always, they call it a turkey torpor. When you have turkey, everybody just sits around in the afternoon. Is it because of the turkey and what's in the turkey, or is it because the fact that people are in the house and carbon dioxide is there?
I think it's a combination. You know, you've got your tryptophan, which is in your turkey, which will, you know, has been known to make you tired. But I think mostly, like, it is, you know, the air quality. When you put a lot of people in concentration, you get high levels of, you know, people just breathing out, and that makes people tired. It happens in offices too. So I think it's a combo, both.
Okay. So what else? How about trees?
Trees are a big one. We just got our tree. So we always, when you pick it up, you bring it home, you know, you cut it and do what you have to do to trim it. And then you want to put it in a bucket. You want to leave it outside for a day just to let a lot of the volatiles, like, you know, when you get it, they come in on trucks and all kinds of stuff. So you want to let everything kind of air out. And then I actually take a sprayer and just spray the whole tree down with water, you know, take your hose and just clean it. Let it dry overnight and then bring it inside. So you always want to give it kind of a little bath and just wash off any of the additional, you know, stuff and debris and plastics and stuff that comes in on it. And you will find when you do that, people who are hypersensitive to trees usually do a lot better. So people say, I'm allergic to a tree, and sometimes it is the tree itself, but a lot of the times it's just all the, you know, debris and stuff they pick up when traveling.
What's your take on sanitizer too? Because this time of the year, I have like giant bottles that I carry with me, right? I used it last Saturday night, had sanitizer.
Yeah, he brought it on the table. We're having dinner, when you're supposed to be there. Let alone everyone's having cocktails. He has a bottle of sanitizer, and every 2 minutes, I'm like, wow, this is, I think, a little neurotic, but, you know, I understand. You want to definitely keep clean. You don't want the...
I mean, if you can't wash your hands and you don't really have access to some type of, you know, water supply where you can just do your hands naturally, then, you know, of course you can use the sanitizer. But you got to remember, there's a lot of chemicals in there with the alcohol. The alcohol is really drying to your hands. So, you know, you just want to make sure that, you know, you don't go crazy with it. It's not the it's much healthier to just wash your hands with really good soap and water, and always do the trick. You do the alphabet. I don't know if you know this, but when you wash your hands, you always want to go A to Z in the alphabet, and that's the duration of time that it really, you know, takes to get off the germ. So A to Z, and then use warm and soapy water.
Yeah, I do that. My wife taught me to use something else. I can't recall it right now, but it's about the same time as A to Z. But when you can't do that, I always rely on the sanitizer. As a matter of fact, I went with my girlfriend. We took the grandkids to Chuck E. Cheese.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, God, that's like the germ
set. I said, the best thing you could do here is, like, spray it out of the ceiling.
Fog it. That's probably something. Fog it.
You need, like, a bottle.
Fog it, yeah. I was afraid to touch anything in there, you know?
It's
walking
sad,
around with
but,
my hands,
I mean,
in my pockets.
I feel like that at the mall, like when I'm going through and they have all those ATMs, you know, the keypads where you have to touch to do your cards. And I'm like,
yeah.
All right. So what? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
cut you off.
No, no.
What can people do too? We got them through the holidays. Now, what can they do in the beginning of the year to make sure they have a healthy home in 2019?
I think just everybody do one test a year. So going into the new year is always an excellent time to get in your mind, I've got to do something healthy for the house. It gets a little quiet. You know, you don't have to spend a lot of money. So you either do a radon test, you do a water test, you do a mold test, you do a VOC test. One test a year for something to sort of assess where you are and to just be preventative with your wellness. I mean, you go to the doctor, you get all these tests and scans and stuff done. It's important to look at your environment and say, hey, you know, I could be doing something here that's, you know, unhealthy. So one test a year, and don't spend a lot of money. I mean, you could go pick up a radon test at a local hardware store. You can call a company like mine and do a water test. Just do something for the home to find out what's going on.
One test a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not a bit. You know, I can say, though, every conversation we had, I always try to pick up something and do it. And I will say one of the big things beside it I'm looking at is my house. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I do not do anymore is drink out of plastic cups. I want glass. So I try to minimize a lot of the plastics. So I don't want to be able to do that. So that's one of the things I did learn, that just trying to minimize the plastics in my life, a lot of the chemicals, the petroleum-based products, just to get it out of my life, to try to minimize that. Is that still...
Well,
Correct.
Yeah, and a lot of these products, you know, the reason that they're so bad is that they're obesogens or estrogen mimickers, meaning they run very close parallel to how our system functions in our endocrine system. So the body gets kind of confused. So that's the reason behind, you know, really avoiding plastics. And also, I wanted to talk a little bit about, and Kevin, you can talk about this too, because I recently found this out. We were in a building project. And so for people who don't know, and you can tell them, Kevin, too, about the laws that were passed for basement to first floor flame protection.
Fire stopping. Fire.
Yep. Right. So if you can just explain to people about what you have to do now, like what's the code, and then I'll talk about what I'm concerned about with building with these new codes that they've passed.
So what the code is just slowing up the fire. It's not that it's going to stop the fire. It's just slowing it up from floor to floor.
Right.
So if you're building a basement, you're putting 2x4 walls up, and then you have penetrations, which would be your plumbing or your electric that go through the plate, or even where the space between the concrete and the wall, there's space behind that can get to your floor joist. All you're trying to do is close that gap up. So if there is a fire that creates in that cavity, it will take a longer period of time to spread from floor to floor.
So people can get out.
And I tell people, listen, it's not designed to, your house is going to burn, mm-hmm. but it's just designed to slow that oxygen up, because it when it finds that area, it can keep working its way through very easily because it's fueled by more oxygen. But if you can control that area into a smaller amount, now also being a smaller amount when you're doing the walls, most townships today adopt the vertical, which means every 10 feet, you have to put drywall that goes from the stud back to the wall. So you're really containing into a small section. Each section of wall behind there is its own little cavityed element that's blocked off, so it doesn't go from floor to floor. And that's where that fire stopping is designed. So it's either putting drywall vertically, horizontally putting plywood. We use plywood in basements. And anywhere you have a penetration, you can use fire foam or fire caulk to stop that penetration. Just seals off that hole. Now, you can use fire foam only in residential, commercial. You're not allowed to use fire foam. It has to be the caulk. That's what that's doing. It's just from floor to floor, isolating the cavity so you don't have that air passing from floor to floor. So if a flame does get in there, it doesn't burn the house as quick. It just slows it up.
Let me ask you both this question. Both can jump in on this. Lately, I've been noticing here in Florida and other places too, multi-story residences, you know, like condos, and it's all a stick method. Years ago, you saw aluminum studs and that
steel
kind of thing,
studs,
and a lot of steel. Okay, and I was in New York yesterday, when you look at a high rise, they either build it out of a lot of concrete or a lot of steel. Okay, and I think there's probably a good reason for that. What is the wisdom of building like a 4 or 5 story multi-unit condo building with the stick method with 2x4s? Will that prevent a fire from spreading the way steel would prevent a fire from spreading?
I think that's a money issue, Kevin, wouldn't you say? I think that's just a way of doing it much cheaper.
Correct. Yeah, it's going to be a little
cheaper.
And I
think as far as quality goes, it's going to be less quality as well.
Yeah. But it's all code compliant then.
I'll give an example, because we just drove by it when we were down in the city. If you remember the building maybe 30 years ago, right? I think it was around Market Street. Remember the high rise that burned?
Yeah.
Right, well, that was made out of steel, and it burned pretty heavy and pretty long. Now it still stayed up, but it still burns.
Mm-hmm.
So when something gets hot enough, it's going to burn. Mm-hmm. So all we're trying to do is... See, in my business, I can understand that, you know, if a house burns down, people are completely devastated. It's more the personal I would look at, they lost. But mm-hmm. for me to rebuild a house, it's very easy to do. This fire stopping is just allowing you a life
to get out.
And that's the most important thing. By the time, you know, you get that house rebuilt again, you look back and say, nobody got hurt. And that's the most important thing we're trying to do, is just to drive.
Now, I'm going to throw a monkey wrench in, Kevin. So we look at, in my industry, right, we look at flame retardants. And you hear about people not wanting to, they're changing the code with furniture. Now the furniture code, they no longer spray couches and furniture with flame retardant. California set that standard, and it's pretty much followed suit now. You know, if you go into a furniture store, and I was in one the other day, and I said, you know, are you still using flame retardant? And they're like, no, it's pretty much been eliminated because of the fact that, you know, these were real toxic things.
Are those the POPs?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, exactly. So POPs are persistent organic pollutants, and these are certain chemicals that have a very durable lifespan and stay around for a long time. And they usually are what we call semi-volatiles, like powders, and a little denser, like versus a VOC, which is more of airborne, and think of it going up into into air and evaporating. These things stay around, and that's what these flame retardants are. And what's happened is, and I'm familiar with this based on some contractors that I was speaking with, they started to build these flooring systems that are sprayed with flame retardant that they're using on those bottom levels between the basement and the first floor. And also they had some problems with them, and I think Ron and I had talked about this, or if not, then it was another contractor, but they are basically, I think Hovnavian was using them as well, where they were producing high amounts of volatile organics because of these flooring systems. So two things. You know, I don't think they're very safe to be using flame retardants on your building products because people don't even know they're there, and then you're, you know, breathing this stuff in and you're having this in your environment all the time. You can get around that by using two levels or two layers of drywall, which is what you're talking about. But then also, like, have you heard anything about these flooring systems and the complications with them?
No, actually I haven't. I mean, the spray flooring that you're talking about, they usually spray on the other side. It, I guess it slows that process up, the burning process.
Mm-hmm, but the foam.
Right. I've never, I mean, that's more of the commercial side of it, where you don't hear much of it in the residential side.
Yeah, because I've been instructed by some new builders that I was actually on lots looking at houses and, you know, was out at a building site. And he said definitively, and then they've had some problems with them. Like, the big builders have used them for condos and houses. And I think they have a color to them, like they're gray, or the flooring system will be gray or green to indicate that there is a flame retardant built in.
No, I got to look into that. Well, here's one thing we talked about, foams, and this is a conversation that you and I had, and this is a great conversation. I always tell a lot of homeowners, I like to use foam around the windows. It's minimal. It does a good seal, but it's also preventing more of that moisture if it does penetrate because the window fails. So I understand that, but people are like, why don't you spray the whole entire house with foam? And I said, you know what? That's a great idea. It really does seal it off, but there's some more of the chemical issues, the heat, the outgassing that produce that are not good for you. So maybe you can explain to homeowners that, yeah, it is a great system, but here's some of the downsides with doing an entire house with closed cell spray foam.
Well, the house can be too tight, too.
I mean, look, the issue, when we've known this for a long time in building projects, you know, and we're going to zero energy. That's like the big theme that the government wants us to go to. And we know that zero energy is better as far as a sustainable way to go, right, with a house. But we've got to bring in fresh air. We know that when you go to a tight building envelope, you're going to have to mechanically bring in air from somewhere. Also, the problem that we have a lot with these buildings that are using OSB, you know, you talk a lot about the leaking that goes around the windows. Well, what we're finding is that the OSB doesn't breathe. It doesn't allow water vapor to penetrate. Same thing with flooring systems. If you use a flooring system underneath as your support beams or you're using your walls. So that moisture that you produce in the house, and people say, well, how do I produce moisture? What do you mean? You produce it from showering, you produce it from sweating, you produce it from cooking.
Mm-hmm.
The weather patterns produce moisture and humidity, and that gets trapped in the house, and it has to escape. It will find its way out, or it will elevate to a point that you'll grow mold within your walls and, you know, in your structure, which you don't want. So when it's trying to find its way out, if you have homes that are built with OSB or oriented strand board or fiberboard, the water can't penetrate through it, so it'll go through the windows. And that's why you start to see these patterns of extensive mold growth around the windows. Part of it, yes, is due to flashing issues, but a big part of it is due to that's how the moisture can get out. So it's forcing its way out through those openings, and when it, you know, when it accumulates there, you start to have more problems. Like, normally, if you had an issue with your flashing, it would dry out, right? And you may not get a mold problem, but certain people get it. And that's because of that extensive moisture that can't get out through the building envelope.
Well, here's one for you that I've been telling people for years, and this is, again, learning from you, is you see a lot of homes today where people try to get a little additional insulation. So what they're trying to do is put a half-inch foam board. So it's a foil-faced foam board, which is unbreathable. Mm-hmm. Then they apply this half-inch foam to the house, and then they tape all the seams.
Yeah.
Which makes it unbreathable. I said, well, look, I use a Tyvek home.
It's got to be breathable, right?
No,
right.
Not the foam's not. Tyvek's breathable.
Right.
But you're putting a foam up and taping the seams. I said, your house is exploding with moisture. And you're in the shower. Here's how you could easily tell. When you're in the shower, even if it's a new window or not, your glass steams up.
Right.
And they're like, well, why does it steam up and nothing else steams up? I said, because glass is an unbreathable surface. It can hold water, and that moisture trying to get out, it's not going to be able to get out. So we're through the walls, through the ceiling, it's working its way out. The Tyvek I still apply, it is watertight, but yet it is still breathable to a point where moisture can pass back out through it. You want to make sure your house is breathable. By putting this half-inch foam board on, thinking that you're getting more insulation, which is very minimal, thinking that return on the payoff is not going to be nowhere near. It's going to take 20 years to do it. But I see the most important thing, it's unbreathable. When you put that foil faced up and you tape the seams, moisture can't pass back out through that. And that's not good for the insulation in your walls also, because that's just, it's a petri dish.
Not good for your health.
It's not good for your
health. And imagine now if you have OSB. And like if you go out west and you go to Oregon, you go to Washington State, parts of California, they only use CDX plywood. They will not use OSB to build because of the moisture conditions, and they know that it can't penetrate. They know how to build. They'll build with bigger overhangs to accommodate, you know, moisture influx that comes from the weather patterns. They'll build with real plywood. They don't do these things. And in the Northeast, we used to be able to get away with it. But now, because of the weather changes, this past summer, you'll talk to any environmental inspector, you'll talk to any mold remediator, we never saw more mold growth than any year prior. I mean, it has been insane. We had high relative humidity. We had weather changes that were drastic. A lot of rain.
A lot of rain,
created big time problems in people's homes. Like, we were seeing it on first and second levels where we've had to install really in-depth dehumidification systems because of the fact that there's no way. There's just these relative humidity levels inside the home are like 80-85%, which are just, you know, it's unheard of, and you can't have it. It just starts to warp everything and turn everything moldy.
Great advice. We're coming up on it here, Caroline. Believe me, every time we have you on, it just a half hour just flies right on by.
I still got about another 20 minutes of conversation with us, so we might have to hold tight here. Just the last thing. So this is in for my own, because when we bought a house, I was going to let you know that when we had dinner last week, but we bought a house, and again, everything looked great, the inside, the outside. The people really did take care of the house, but there was a little bit of mold at the base of the drywall. When I could see behind the wall, it was just a little bit of ground elevation.
Rooms?
No, just in the basement in the corner.
Okay.
But one thing it did have is a dehumidifier. And so what I do now is it sometimes gets a little damp. So I just run this all the time. I just don't like that moist air sitting around. So it drains itself. It pumps the water outside. Yeah. The people must have knew it, that they had it, but it really works great. So I cut out that little bit of section of a drywall that was moldy, cut it completely out. Everything's doing fine. We're not having that odor smell down there by doing the dehumidifier. So it really does work keeping your house to where it should be instead of having all this moisture penetrating.
Yeah, you know when it's there. You feel it.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. Anymore with the weather, if you live in the Northeast, you've got to have a dehumidifier in a basement. I mean, there's no exception. 30 to 50% is your max. You need to run it. You also need a commercial dehumidifier here that runs more than your traditional, like, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's unit. You want a unit that runs about 100 pints at least, and that gives you a lot more water removal, and you hook it up to a condensate pump, and you go right out into your sump pit like you did. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I can keep talking about this situation about the molds, because after this, I am headed to one of our callers. Our listeners came in and said, hey, listen, we have an issue, and I'm going to go out and take a look at it. It's the stucco remediation.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's getting worse. And I really came up with a great solution instead of boring holes into the house. And I said, did you listen to the show 3 weeks ago? He goes, yeah, we did, but we just didn't understand it. So I'm going to go out there, because they just had testing done. They bored through the house. And I said, once you compromise the outside, whether you have the stucco or not, once it's compromised, that underlayment, there's no way to fix it. And they just filled a bunch of caulk in there. I said, there's other ways to do it, to check.
Right. Go from the inside.
Go from the inside.
Exactly.
I said, drywall fix is easy. I said, you know, I explained to him, just by the pictures of the house, I explained to him. So I'm going to go out there and show him. But one of the things I said, beside me taking it out, I said, we can do an MVOC test by putting a prod in there to see if you have mold spores that are coming in there. Because if there's rot, there's mold. So if there's water that's in your, and he said the house was built with OSB. I said, if there's water that's continually getting in every time it leaks, because the house is 15 years old,
mold there.
You're
going to
have mold. Damn. Mold thrives in that, on wet, damp, consistent elements. And by having that with this MVOC, if we're pouring out the mold spores. But one of the big things I do like to get maybe another college is to talk about the stucco remediation and the problems that people are having. One, of how to remediate it. Number two is, a lot of these companies come in and selling that a bill of goods of all this moisture, and there's mold, and there's the big thing is the moisture that people are looking at. Oh, it's got high moisture. And I know, Ron, you and I talked about it. I've seen it where these mold indicators that they're trying to put out are the high moisture. And I said, well, any stucco can produce high moisture.
Exactly.
I said, if I did your house, and I told this to the homeowner, he panicked. I said, if I physically did your house, number one, I can guarantee you this. You could put water on it 24 hours a day, and that stucco is never going to leak in. Number one, it's still going to pull the moisture in, and you're going to have the high moisture readings, but depending on the underlayment. But the other backside to this is the breathable of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to make it so tight.
Right.
So there's a compromise. Yeah. So you have to have these elements. And the only one in the township that where I actually live is Northampton Township. The great inspectors, they're the only ones in it. I know the whole area that I've ever done basements in that require us to put a mechanical system, a fresh air dampering system to bring the fresh air in. And on the other side of the basement is when you turn the main light switch on, a fan, which has to then pull the stale air out. Mm-hmm. So it's recirculating air. So that's a lot of good things we can still talk about. But I would like to get you back on to talk a little bit more about this stucco remediation and the mold and some of the problems that are causing and some of the scares that people are leaning into.
Yeah, definitely.
We will do it. We will do it. Caroline, how does somebody get in touch with you?
Call us or email or visit our website at healthyhomeexpert.com. The name is My Healthy Home is the name of our company, and we service all 50 states. So if you have any issues, you can just give us a ring.
Well, there's certainly a lot to service in Pennsylvania. Like, it's ground zero for stucco, right? So, thank you very much for coming on again. Take the advice that Caroline gave it to me.
Absolutely.
Okay? All right, take care.
Caroline, thanks again.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Your Valuable Home, sponsored by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets.